Woohoo! The Husband Material Podcast has now received over 100,000 downloads. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for helping this show exist. Without you, there would be no podcast. So thank you. If you would like to celebrate this milestone with me, please review the show. Reviews let other people know if they should listen or not. And reviews prove the podcast, which is why some people ask for a review after every episode, but I don't do that. So I'm taking a different approach. I want to ask you on this occasion, 100,000 downloads, this is a big moment for me. Would you help me get to 100 reviews? Right now, we have 75 and need 25 more to reach 100. Thank you so much. And always remember, you are God's beloved son, in you, he is well pleased. Welcome to the Husband Material Podcast, where we help Christian men outgrow porn. Why? So you can change your brain, heal your heart, and save your relationship. My name is Drew Boa, and I'm here to show you how. Let's go. Today on the show, we have Stephen Thomas, my fellow coach here at Husband Material, and Dr. Eddie Caparucci, who will be leading the upcoming Husband Material virtual retreat. And today, we are going to give you a little bit of a foretaste of what that retreat will be like. And we're specifically talking about relationships, because for men who struggle with porn, yes, we also struggle with relationships. They go together. So today we're going to be talking about a list of 14 blind spots for healthy relationships that hinder men, that hinder us from truly entering into intimacy, into true connection, and into what we were really created for. So guys, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Drew.
Sweet. Now, Eddie, you first introduced me to this concept of blind spots by telling a story about one of your clients.
Yes. Really very interesting. It probably happened about 8 years ago. I had a client who I had been working with him for about a year, who was dealing with pornography addiction. And he'd done great work. I mean, he'd been doing everything he needed to do. He was going to his groups. He's actually going to wind up being a group leader at some point along the way. But his wife was having a very difficult time trying to move back toward him. And again, we understand that a year is not always the right time. Sometimes it takes longer. But she seemed very, very standoffish. So I asked her if she'd come in so I could talk to her about it. And I did. And so right out of the gate, I just started with, so tell me, you know, I think he's doing well, but yet you don't seem to want to reengage. You know, what is it that maybe, what's that barrier that keeping you there? And she looked down for a minute and she looked up and she leaned forward on the couch sitting at the edge, like right toward me like this. And she said, you know, she goes, for years I thought there was something wrong because my husband wasn't being sexual with me. And he kept saying, no, I'm just tired, I'm exhausted. And I asked him about pornography, and he said, no, no, I'm not using porn. No, I never would do that. And sooner, you know, of course, we find out that's exactly what he was doing. And you know what? And she's telling, and so now today, you sit here, and you tell me that he is better, he is not using pornography any longer, and that perhaps I need to start moving toward him. But I have a question. She goes, you see, there are things about him that before D-Day that I wasn't happy with that are still going on today, a year later. He knows I don't like him to take his phone into the bathroom. He takes his phone to the bathroom. He knows that when he comes home that he should be engaging me and the kid, but yet he's still in his own head. He's still, you know, busy doing work, or you want to veg out in front of the TV. And then she went on listing 3-4 more things. So she goes, all of these characteristics, the behavior that I saw before D-Day when there was pornography are still here today. And she goes, but you're saying that I should believe him that he's not using porn because he's telling me he's not using porn. But he was telling me he wasn't using porn before. So what has changed here? I don't see a change, except he's telling me I'm not using porn. But that's what he did before. And I mean, when she got done, it was like somebody took a 2x4 and hit me in the head. And I was like, wow. And then it made me really fully understand that in order for couples to reconnect, that women in a large majority of cases need to see more than just the behavior modification of I'm no longer engaging in the sexual activity. They need to see a sense that we are learning how to emotionally connect with one another.
Absolutely. This is so important.
100%. And I first even want to say, I love that we're having this conversation. Because for my story, I came into marriage never, while we were in the process of dating, I promised my wife that I wouldn't use porn again. And I kept that promise. So when we were 5 or 6 years into marriage and I've never used porn and our marriage still sucked, I was like, what's the deal? I'm like, I don't use porn. Go find another guy who can say that, you know? And like, but I've realized that it is an emotional and intimacy disorder. And because of years of dealing porn, I had no clue how to connect with her. You know, I just couldn't attune to her. I couldn't figure it out. As hard as I tried, I had good intentions, but the practical skills were just not there. And our marriage sucked. And a large part of it was me. And I was also, I don't know if this is what in one of the blind spots, but I blamed her. So it means a lot to me to talk through this, because I tell guys that I coach, I tell them, like, look, you got to realize that all of this that we're going to be talking about, it's like downloading a new iOS system. And the whole time you're going to be resisting it, being like, what are you talking about? Like, no, it's going to seem wrong what we're teaching you. And you're going to resist it even. And you got to realize that you got to where you are because you've been functioning on your own operating system. So if you can bring in some humility and just listen to some people who've been through this, you'll do really well.
Yeah. I think, you know, what you're saying, Stephen, has a lot of merit, because I think for a large majority of men, they have no idea of what is emotional intimacy. What you were talking about before, Scott, you know, what I tell them is you wouldn't know emotional intimacy if it hit you in the face. And while I do, I love Doug Weiss, and he does great work, and his whole anorexia aspect is dead on. But I also think there's another part of this, because I think there's an aspect of not so much that we turn away, even though there is that part. I think there's another aspect where we never got the tools. We just don't know what to do. And that happened in that early stages of childhood development, where parents, it's more neglect than it is abuse, but they don't teach us how to emotionally regulate. They don't teach us how to attune. They don't teach us how to identify our emotion. And most importantly, they don't teach us how to sit with emotional discomfort. And because of that, the kid decides, oh, how do I deal with this problem? I know, I won't think about it. And how did he not think about it? He learned to distract himself. He learned to run away. And we continue to take that into, and think about it, relationships are difficult. Relationships are, you know, they're something you have to work at. Don't want to deal with it. So therefore, it's like, you know, at the beginning of that relationship, everything wonderful is great. But the moment she does anything that takes you back, where you start to think about, oh my God, she's just like mom, just like sister, and you don't think about it, but it's subconscious. Boom, you start pulling away. You start pulling away, or you put that wall up, and you have no idea why you're doing it. And now here we go. We're just stuck in a nasty cycle. And what's at the heart of everything going on here? Emotional immaturity. And we have to learn to grow up. But again, I only know what I know. And the whole idea of that attachment disorder, which has played a huge role in all of this, and as I said, as soon as that first, you know, thing goes wrong, as you were saying, Stephen, like, you know, oh, we got married, and then it sucked. Well, it sucked because it didn't meet your expectations, I would imagine, of what it should have been, and you were blaming her, as you said, for that.
Yeah. And I was just writing a note because I didn't want to lose that part. But, you know, it's interesting because the kid shows up. We experience these emotions that were trapped because they never got dealt with from our childhood. And, you know, they come out. And the whole time what we're experiencing, we will blame our spouse. Or we'll blame, it doesn't even have to be your spouse. It can just be another person in a relationship. But you'll blame them instead of realizing, like, to me, the biggest blind spot is, like, this is your kid. Like, truthfully, if we were healthy, if we were secure in an area, like, a person's offense towards us or wouldn't even harm us because we'd be so secure that it'd be like, oh, I can see that this is your pain or this is, you know what I mean? We wouldn't respond in a way where we'd feel defensive. We'd be able to take it. And so I just think it's super profound to just realize that, like, when you have a big overreaction, I mean, it's hard to call it an overreaction because I'm not trying to dismiss what someone's going through, but it's always good to just, I've learned to just pause and say, all right, like, where's little Steven in here? How can I comfort myself? How can I draw that love from God? And then I'm going to re-enter the conflict with my wife and then we'll get through it. So,
yes, yeah, absolutely. That's so critical. And for me, what is my defense mechanism? A lot of times it's not to externalize blame onto my wife. It's to internalize it and take too much responsibility for what's going on. If something's wrong, it must be my fault. And that's what little Drew grew up with.
Right. But see, the thing is, in many cases, our guys, they don't want to go toward that hurt. They want to run away, or they're going to be aggressive because they want to shut it down. And then all they do is they just make the problem worse. They exacerbate it.
Yes. And it does make things worse. It's also a coping mechanism that made sense at the time, because there was a time when that was our best move. When we did need walls to go up because there was hurt, because there was neglect. And so I find it's helpful sometimes to validate that, okay, these lies that I'm believing that are making my life worse right now, well, at one point, they may have actually been true, or at the very least, it felt like it was true.
They were defense mechanisms. They were the only ones we could come up with at a very young age. Because again, we don't have a lot of worldly experiences. And most of our thinking is emotionally based more so than rationally based. So that's what we come up with. And again, along the way, no one's correcting us because we're keeping it hidden because of shame. It's the shame aspect of all of it. And it's just something that continues to manifest itself. And it's just a really vicious cycle. And that's why for me, it was almost 40 years. And then I finally learned, oh, why do I do what I do? And then I realized, oh, guess what? You know, I don't know how to regulate myself. I want to run away from everything that seems to be, you know, negative. Okay. I don't know how to tune myself to other people's emotion. And like all that was foreign language to me. You know, like I don't understand what any of this stuff is. But now I do. I realize, oh, okay, yes, you know what? Little Eddie set up all these defense mechanisms to get one thing, comfort. I just want comfort.
So we all are dealing with our inner children. We all grew up with deficiencies in these different areas that we're not aware of. Eddie, what are some of the specific symptoms that we want to be looking for?
Yeah, when we're looking at the blind spots, I mean, as I said, I came up with 14 of them. And the one that, again, that is at the core of what happens with our addiction is the idea of avoiding emotional pain. You know, we just don't know how to sit with that discomfort. And many times, we're not even fully aware of that discomfort. What I call it is muted discomfort. You know, it could be like somebody just a little anxious, can't sit still, you know, and okay, what do I do next? You know, boredom could be part of all of that, but we don't know how to sit with our pain, process through it, grieve what we have to maybe grieve, call on somebody to help us get through that. Where's my lifeline? So avoiding emotional pain, I think that is one of the key ones. The second one that I think is really key, that I want to turn it back to everybody else, is the idea of being inwardly focused. I think we are just too much in our own heads. It's really all about us. I mean, we may project out how much we care. Let me buy you this. Let me take you here. Let me do. But you know what? When it comes to feeling, when it comes to emotion, when it comes to all of that, I'm more concerned about mine than I am yours, even though I don't realize that. But again, it's about the fact of comfort. I just want comfort. So anything you bring into my world that's going to look like discomfort, I'm going to be batting that thing out of here as quick as possible or running away from it. And I think what we need to do, we have to be more outwardly focused, where the needs, wants, and desires of our spouse, are they supersede ours. And that doesn't mean that we don't take care of our needs and wants, but we need to be, again, in a Christ-like manner, reaching outward more so than inward. So those are the two big ones that I see.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting too. Like you're saying, like, I'll buy this for you or take you here. And it's interesting because sometimes that can still be inwardly focused. Are we doing it because we love our spouse, or is it because we're codependent and we need their affirmation because we can't, if they're not happy with us, we're like dying inside. And it just takes me to a place where I have to learn, you guys have talked about some different ways of dealing with your blind spots and calling people. And for me, it was paying for counseling for a long time to help me see my blind spots and learn how to regulate. But from that, just learning that, God's love is abundant. So when I'm feeling insecure, when I'm feeling like I need that affirmation, like truly believing not just in my mind, but in my heart, and being able to feel those emotions of like, oh, God loves me and he's proud that I'm even trying, it's okay to love our spouses wanting something in return, to kind of go back to that, like, because we want connection in return, but it can't be out of actual control, So I just thought that was a thought I had when you shared that.
We have to slow down, because if not, we're going to go from rational thinking to emotional thinking. We're going to move there like that, like you said, in a split second. So therefore, it has to be breathe to your point. What is going on? What's happening with me? And I got to try to stay focused here on what's happening. I got to be more outward. And a lot of times it has to be the idea that I got to see pain. If we don't see pain, we see hostility. It's like, stop seeing hostility. Look at the pain. Have the empathy. What that word mean? I don't know. What empathy? What that mean? So we got to teach them how to do that too, in that aspect. But no, yeah, Scott, you raised a lot of great points there. That's part of all that's going on. And the thing is, it goes on in a split second.
Yeah.
So therefore, we're like here, and we're like, hey, everything's good. And the next minute, we're like, oh my God, where can I run to? Or how can I shut her down?
And this seems like maybe a good part to describe the difference between self-awareness and being inwardly focused. Because being inwardly focused, all in my head, very self-centered, is a problem. Whereas being more in touch with my body, being more self-aware of the sensations, the emotions, the narratives, the regulation, my breathing, my interactions with this other person, being aware of little Drew is incredibly important so that we can be outwardly focused. Because when I'm aware of that, I can set it aside and focus on the other person.
Right. And that's where you look at another one of the blind spot. It's lack of mindfulness. We're not mindful. We have our head down and we're running through life. Okay. We have 1,000 things that are racing in our mind, and we're just not sitting there to be able to say, what is required of me now, especially in this relationship? Okay, we externalize the problem, which is little Eddie, who wants just comfort, okay, and who is, again, with all the negative narratives, because he's stuck back there dealing with all that crap. And I externalize, and therefore I provide him that comfort by, as you said, what are those words of affirmation that I can give him? But again, the words of truth. I'm not making stuff up. then how do I know they're true? Because it's that I see myself the way God sees me, not the way I perceive myself. I see him the way he sees me. And that's tough for some people because they think God looks at him, at them, and says, oh, you're not, you know, keeping up to the standard that I set. And you're just having, you know, you're not that son I really wanted. Yeah, and that's not true. None of that is true.
I mean, it's all really excellent. I 100% agree.
Yeah.
I feel like anything I'd say would just be redundant.
Yeah. I mean, if we try to add to that message of unconditional love, we subtract from it. So we'll leave it there for that. What I wanted to say was that's a lot to remember. If you are wondering, okay, should I go rewind and listen to that again? Don't worry about it. I've got the self-compassion and all of the blind spots that Eddie is talking about in the show notes. And I'm going to include a list of identity in Christ statements too. So this is going to be a great little toolbox to help us regulate, not only to self-regulate, but to co-regulate. You know, we don't have to use these tools alone. We can use them together. And that's when it's the most powerful. We're relearning healthy relationships.
Yeah. Hey, Drew, can I tackle two more blind spots?
Go for it.
Yeah. Let's look at two. One, lacking curiosity. Just don't. And that doesn't mean we may not be curious about sports or we may not be curious about cars or anything, but we're talking about relationships. And I'll never forget the one story that a client told me. He was sitting there, he's eating a bowl of ice cream. He's standing in the kitchen. His wife comes home from a Bible study and she got all these like books and papers and stuff. And he goes, so how was your study? She goes, oh, really good. She goes, we had a really good time. He's like, okay, that's great. She goes, do you want to sit down and go through some of the, you know, curriculum of what we're going to talk about? And he looked down at his ice cream and he looked at her. No, not now. And just walks away and keeps eating his ice cream. And she was devastated by that, as you could well imagine, because here it is. She's trying to say, oh, look, this is an opportunity for us to kind of bond and share about this. But his ice cream was more important. And that's why, you know, it's like, oh, the comfort of that ice cream. Like, we need to be curious. The problem with curiosity and the reason many of us are not curious, it because there's, and this is the next blind spot, fear. I'm going to say the wrong thing, okay? Or I'm not going to say the right thing. It is, it's like, you know what? Say nothing. Say nothing. Don't, let's not get too deep in our dialogue, in our conversation, because the more we do, the more likely we are to stumble and to fall. So therefore, nod our head a lot, oh, that's real nice, and move on. But fear, if you think about it, fear for all of these blind spots is a central part of everything that's here. We're afraid, you know. We're afraid to sit with the emotional pain. We're afraid to be curious. We're afraid to be outwardly focused. We're afraid to be mindful. I mean, we're afraid to connect with God because thinking, oh my gosh, he's not going to want to connect with me anyway. It sits in all of them, including the one that I call the hide and lie syndrome. That's where I'm going to stay under the radar. And I'm not always going to tell the truth. And maybe I'm just going to admit things. But the problem there is, go back to the idea that, oh, if I do, I'm going to be in trouble. So once again, the less is better.
And there's another one of those lies that maybe was a truth at one time, because back in the day, hiding and lying was my way of not getting beaten, not getting punished. And for lack of curiosity, maybe no one was curious about me. Maybe no one was asking me those questions.
Right.
I was just going to say, you know, this makes me think of a conversation I was just having with my wife recently, where this kind of lack of curiosity and the fear and then just kind of the blahness of, I was telling her, I was kind of grieving. I was like, babe, like so many Christian men are just blah. Like there's no personality there. And it's this lack of curiosity. It's this, I'm just going to hold my cards. We can stay with sports and weather. sprinkle in a little politics, but we're not going to go too much because I'm afraid of being known. I'm afraid, you know, maybe they're afraid of being punished even, and they have this hide and lie thing going on. But so I was just having that conversation, I think, yesterday with my wife. Well, we were just commenting. I mean, because my wife and I both have done work with helping men. I've helped men recover from porn, and she's helped wives who've struggled with betrayal. And so we were just, if anything, sort of using it to pump ourselves to like keep going down this road, helping people and to seeing, men specifically more even than women, but come alive and have a personality and, just show up. I've had friends that I've said, hey, you need to stop being blah right now. I've literally told people that, or I'm like, I used to lead peer desire groups. All right, let's try sharing that again. Like, I mean, and it's just, it's out of love. It's like, look, you're interesting, but I know it. I've seen that. And but right now this is like as boring as all get out. And that's not who you are. I know that. So,
but it's safe. See, that's a safe place to be. And for a majority of men, they would prefer to feel that safety. However, these men, all of us, we want emotional connection. We want intimacy. That's what we're really chasing when we're chasing all the other stuff that we chase. But again, as I said to you before, we don't know what emotional intimacy is. And once we start to understand what it is, it's like, oh my gosh, this is really frightening. So then we have to teach them to say, yes, you're right, it is. But again, oh, guess what? You got to sit with your pain. Sit with the fact that it's discomforting. They got to be emotionally intimate. I got to sit with it, but I still have to move forward and try. Because just sitting back is going to make me blah. Just sitting back is going to make me blend in with the wallpaper. Just sitting back is going to make me get to the end of life, and it's going to be, look at all the opportunities I missed. I missed a lot. I'll tell a real quick story. I'm going to shut up for a second. I had a client the fall before, who I'd been doing work with for about a couple of years. And he was doing great. He was doing all the emotional intimacy. He was really coming alive. And he walks in, it was in the fall, and he says, I got to ask you a question. He goes, are the leaves brighter this year than in the past? I was like, bravo. I go, no, they're not. They are just as bright as they've always been, but you're noticing them now. You are captivated by it. It's something right. That's so small that means a lot to you. And that's what we're ultimately trying to do here with men. We're not just trying to help them, whether it is to, move away from same-sex attraction, get away from pornography, stop engaging in other sexual behavior. We're trying to get them to live a life abundant.
Until now, because that is the good work we get to do. That's why we are here. That's the gift we get to give one another, is reversing those curses of coming into those areas where we are blind, and not just bringing awareness, we're bringing resurrection to every place where there has been death, where there has been decay, where there has been despair and blah, and it happens when we wake up. That's what we're going to be doing later this month at the Husband Material Virtual Retreat, and all of us are going to be leaders. Eddie will be the main speaker. I'll be the host. Stephen will be small group leaders. Eddie and I will be leading our own VIP small groups, and we would love to see you there, because we're going to be practicing exactly what we're talking about, and there's so much hope. Eddie, can you give us a little bit of a glimpse of what it looks like to move out of these blind spots and into coming alive?
Yeah, and what it does is what it becomes is the true appreciation that I am the prince of a king, that God wants more for me and from me, and that I can't be just in the shadows, in the background. I can't let fear dominate my life. I have to learn how to hold on to that fear, whatever it is. And there are many of them. We started talking about them today. We'll talk a lot more about them during the retreat. But I have to learn to hold on to this discomfort and yet still move forward to do the right things, the things that are right for my own growth, my personal growth, my own emotional development, my emotional maturity, but also what is right for my family, my community, my brothers that I'm surrounded by, all of that. That is what we're looking to do. But we also understand that it's not something that, you know, we don't have pixie dust that we can just throw on you to make it all happen. I wish we did. We don't. We've all been through this, okay? And it takes work. It takes time. It takes commitment. And that's a lot of what we're going to be talking about here. That's what we need. But again, it is about also perseverance. And it is not allowing shame to keep us captives. We must move beyond that shame. Because once you move beyond it, then things start to fall into place easier, okay? Well, actually, it's simple, but it's not easy. It's simple. But you have to deal with the shame aspect of it. And the way I deal with shame, and God started to mention it before, is that I think God says, hey, stand here before me. Show me your shame. Not because I want to sit here and mock you or whatever, but I want to take it away from you. Because no son or daughter of mine should ever be in shame. You are the prince or the princess of a king. And that's where we have to stay.
One thing kind of on that topic that I just wanted to touch base on is, Scott, you, earlier in this recording, you mentioned how, you know, even in superheroes, they have their like bat cave and their isolation place. And it's just worth noting that there's a representation of what masculinity is, which is this isolating and doing it on your own, avoiding entering into this pain, avoiding looking at our emotions. And then when you throw on top of that, the fact that most of us, I'd say probably 99% of us didn't receive that security of like, hey, you're a man, you're awesome. You know, we didn't get that security from our own parent, from our own father. So like entering into this is scary. It's like, it's almost, there's this resistance of like, is this even manly to do this? You know, and it just takes more and more men who see it stepping into it and owning our masculinity. Like, you know, this is right. And I'm going to show you. And so I just think that, I thought that was a cool analogy of the superheroes. And I wanted to show you how I think that actually can hinder us. So
guys, if you're listening to this, if you're watching this and you want closer male friendships, if you want to sit with your emotional pain, not just for 5 minutes, but for a whole weekend, if you want to spend some time training, developing the skills to be more okay with yourself, to be more okay with other people in the middle of discomfort, in the middle of pain and challenge, and if you want to step more fully into a version of masculinity, which is way healthier than the one that you grew up with, come to this weekend retreat. Go to husbandmaterial.com/retreat. And even if it's already happened by the time you're watching this, go there and sign up to get notified about the next one. Steven, you had to say something.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at I have the blind spots on my page and this whole avoiding emotional pain. And again, I'm talking to the guy who's like, I don't even know if this is really masculine, if this is really how guys should be. The guys I coach, like when they face their pain, I'm sure to tell them, dude, that was badass. Because what's more masculine, confronting pain or running from it? Honestly, you know, and even I have a friend who's from Israel, and he told me that in Hebrew, the word for man means overcomer. So in our identity, we are overcomers. We don't run from pain. We walk through it and we overcome it. We're more than conquerors.
And what is more painful than childhood? So the topic of this retreat is healing the inner child.
We have so much information to share. We have, and there's going to be so many wonderful, leaders, coaches, clinicians, counselors who are going to be part of this weekend. I am just so proud, you know, to see my peers be part of all of this, because again, we're doing this because, you know, this is a call for God. God told them, he said, this is where I want you. I want you in the trenches. I want you helping other men, because we were in your spot at one time. And it's not like, oh, we're all better now. That's not the case. We've just learned how to manage it. And we continue to learn how to manage it along the way. That doesn't mean we don't have temptation. Doesn't mean that we're not, you know, vulnerable at times, but we know what to do when that happens. Goes back to what, you know, Scott was saying before, we're staying ahead of things. We're staying ahead of it. And that's what we want to do to help you guys as you move forward too.
Absolutely. We're going to have 16 small group leaders, each with a group of 5 men. So it's going to get close. It's going to get personal as much as we can do through a digital screen.
You know, the one thing I do want to bring up, because I think we're running out of time, but the, you know, you're talking about, Scott, before about how, you know, the pain of childhood and, you know, what goes on. But you know what? There are a lot. I don't know if you guys see this, but I see this a lot, that my clients will come in and say, oh, I didn't have a bad childhood. I had a good childhood. My childhood was fine. And what they're doing is they're thinking in the terms of the big T trauma. You know, I didn't have any big T trauma. I wasn't, you know, sexually abused, and my father wasn't an alcoholic. But it's really interesting when you start to continue to work with them, and then you realize, oh, Dad was really never around. Dad was like always working and such. And Mom, no, yeah, well, Mom wasn't really very touchy-feely. But what they did, their parents, in most cases, when people say, oh, I had a good childhood, if their parents were doers, they did stuff. They'd go to the baseball game. They would shoot, cook dinner. They did stuff. But to your point, God, nobody was there touching the face. Nobody, you didn't sit on somebody's lap. You know, you never had any of that closeness. It was just they were there doing stuff. And what they did, so that's what they gave. They gave, here's my time. But what they didn't give, with the teaching and the skills on how to have an emotional IQ.
Yes.
So I could be in touch with my emotions. I can express them, and I could take on the emotions of other people when I need to be there to help them validate. So we're going to talk a little bit about that on the retreat too. And
yes,
how that all plays into it.
Awesome. Guys, thank you so much for being here. I want to close with one final question for each of you. What is your favorite thing about emotional maturity?
A good marriage.
Confidence. I feel very confident in what I do, in my decision making. I don't try to figure out what does my wife want to hear. I just speak from the heart.
Frankly, my favorite thing about emotional maturity and freedom from porn is little Drew. I neglected him for so long.
Yeah.
And now he's with me every day. Wouldn't trade that for the world.
Good for little Drew.
Guys, I look forward to seeing you at the Husband Material Virtual Retreat, February 26th to 28th. Always remember, you are God's beloved son. In you, he's well pleased.
Woohoo! The Husband Material Podcast has now received over 100,000 downloads. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for helping this show exist. Without you, there would be no podcast. So thank you. If you would like to celebrate this milestone with me, please review the show. Reviews let other people know if they should listen or not. And reviews prove the podcast, which is why some people ask for a review after every episode, but I don't do that. So I'm taking a different approach. I want to ask you on this occasion, 100,000 downloads. This is a big moment for me. Would you help me get to 100 reviews? Right now, we have 75 and need 25 more to reach 100. Thank you so much. And always remember, you are God's beloved son. In you, he is well pleased. 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 You, he is well pleased.